Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Wealth Protector TV. This is Paul Hitchcock. I'm really excited to have my colleague and top attorney, Noelle Bryce, with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, so we're going to jump into this important topic. This is the different types of estate plans. And Noelle, you were saying offline, there's a lot of confusion about this. So let's jump in. What do we need to know?
Thanks for having me, first of all. I really appreciate it. I want to take this opportunity to talk about different types of estate plans. But before that, what's an estate? An estate is everything you own, okay, all your property. And then what's a plan? Well, that's kind of what we're getting into. So if you own a bunch of things and then something happens to you, you pass away, that's called an inheritance type of activity, right? So we have money transferring from you to your loved ones. And so how does that happen? Well, it could happen in a number of ways. You can actually be proactive in putting something together, or it might happen automatically without you actually knowing, depending on the type of asset, or it'll go through court. So let's kind of go through the different types of plans. I'll list them out and then we can go through each one of them. And maybe Paul, you can guide me here on, you know, any follow-up questions. But the first type of plan is if you do nothing, okay, then the government will have your own plan. Okay, the probate court will step in, the judge will step in, the probate code will apply to what's called intestate distribution. That's if you do nothing. The government has its own way of handling transferring your estate to the next generation.
Okay, and there true. And every state has their own probate system going on.
Exactly. Every state's got its own probate system. They're very similar because the idea is the same. We just need to transfer assets to the next generation. But some of them might have a different estate tax. Some of them might have a different process, whether it's cumbersome or not. Probate in California is typically very cumbersome. It can take anywhere from 18 months to 3 years for even a simple estate, even a simple estate. So doing nothing has a lot of consequences in addition to your plan not being followed, or if you don't like the intestate rules, which means you may not want to follow them, then your family members who are automatically going to receive will receive their inheritance and you have really no control over that. So it could be a lot of unintended consequences for how you want your assets to transfer.
And it's public too, right, Noelle? I mean, it's made public. People can check out what's going on when that happens.
The probate process is totally public. Documents are submitted, available for public review. So this is a huge concern for families who don't want people nosing around in their family business.
Right.
And we see it, you know, we see very famous sort of celebrities who did no estate planning, or maybe just had a will, which is another type of estate plan. They just had a will or they did nothing. And so all their information is available for public record and everybody gets to gossip about it, unfortunately, and about all the family conflict and drama that happened after the fact. So we have a plan to do nothing. That is a type of plan because something will happen. The other type is joint ownership. We could talk about that. The other type is having a will, okay, just a will by itself. The other is having a revocable living trust. And the other is beneficiaries on certain accounts.
Okay,
so all of these are ways in which either you are actively involved in designating someone to receive your asset, or you are putting in writing, you know, your preference for where those assets should go. So there's pitfalls to, I would say, all of these types of plans, with the exception of the revocable living trust, which we always, almost always recommend for our clients, especially homeowners in California, especially families with kids, especially small business owners, all of that, because the revocable living trust is the way in which you have the most control over where those assets go. And you can plan for multiple generations of wealth transfer.
Right, right. So we're jumping in to start with. You mentioned the joint ownership. Are you talking about specific accounts? Is that about?
So joint ownership is a way where two people own something, or maybe more than two, but they own it equally. And then there's usually a type of survivorship right. So we could see this sometimes on real property where two people, maybe husband and wife, own something as joint tenants. So one of them passes away, the other gets the asset 100%. So if one passes away, we have a plan. It goes to the other person. Okay. This could also happen in bank accounts, joint ownership of bank accounts. There's a survivor right to that account. And so with you not even knowing that you have a plan in place, if you have your asset titled as a joint owner or a joint tenancy, if it's property, then if you pass away first, guess what? The plan is it goes to the other person. And that's not necessarily what you may have intended. You may have intended that asset to go to your kids or to a family member or to a nonprofit. Who knows? But the fact is, it's already been decided for you based on how it's titled.
So that's interesting, because I don't think a lot of people think about that at all, where joint tenant, yeah, on a bank account, you're not even related. It's a business partner. And whatever you own together in joint tenancy, your business partner would get everything and your kids would be cut out of it.
Potentially, yes. Potentially? I mean, sometimes businesses are owned by the corporation or the company. And in that case, the business bank account, I mean, is owned by the company. And in that case, it would be the one to own the bank account, regardless of who died. But you're right on the point there, Paul, in that you could have sort of a informal, let's say, sole proprietorship and add somebody on as a joint owner, or have, you know, a partnership account that hasn't been yet transferred into the partnership name, and you're just starting finances and you have the other as joint owner. Well, what if you put in a lot more into that account as initial capital? Next thing you know, that account's gone. If you pass away, it automatically goes to the other owner. This happens a lot too with soon to be married couples, right? Fiance. They say, oh, let's just set up an account together. We're going to be married, or things fall through the cracks. But one of them put way more separate property into that account, way more of their own property into it. And now we're dealing with an imbalanced and unintended consequences happening due to joint ownership. Now, don't get me wrong, Paul, joint ownership is a good plan if that's what you intend. Okay, right, if that's what you intend. But a lot of times it's not being actively thought as a potential consequence when you have joint owners. And if the other person passes away before you and you become the full owner, well, now we have a probate problem, because that asset may not have another place to go to after. And if we do nothing on that asset, then it's subject to the probate process. So joint ownership, It could be a type of plan. It may have unintended consequences. And if you are the only survivor, then we're subject to probate. And also joint ownership, generally, you're exposed to the other owner's liability, which is a whole nother conversation, why it's important to talk to an attorney about these things.
Yeah, no, fascinating. And then question that comes up a lot is, were there certain accounts, a 401k account, maybe a life insurance policy, even some banks on accounts where you have a beneficiary designation? Okay, this is the beneficiary. What's the best practice there? Do you put an individual's name, or do you put the name of your trust there?
Yeah. So beneficiaries, remember, that was one of the other estate plans I mentioned. Having beneficiaries on all your accounts, if you have no real property, that's a great way of having some kind of plan, because at least you're in control as to who is on those accounts. Every account's going to be different. I think my understanding is with retirement accounts that are subject to California law, where we have community property, typically the spouse, if you're married, has to be listed as first. So there's really no choice there unless they waive their right. And then secondary beneficiary, if you have a trust, it can be the trust. There's a conversation around whether that's a good idea for tax purposes as it comes out and the way it gets taxed over time. But it can be an adult child. And then the assets would stretch out for their benefit. If it's a bank account, It can be anyone. Typically, if you have a trust, you want the trust to own the account from the outset and not it be the beneficiary, but it's also an option to put the trust as beneficiary. But the bottom line here is, Paul, beneficiary designations are great. They are a way to make sure the asset isn't subject to probate. So if you have a life insurance policy, that's a lot of money that we don't want to just be subject to probate and taxation. So it's very good to keep those beneficiary designations up to date. Like if you have different relationships at that point in your life, or you got divorced or anything that changed, you got to go back and see, do the beneficiary designations still make sense to you? Because if they don't, then they need to be updated. But unfortunately, this type of plan, Paul, doesn't account for, excuse me, I don't know why my voice is going out. It doesn't account for real property. You know, there is no beneficiary on a real property. So if you have real property in California or any other state for that matter, you can't pay it on death. Right.
Oh, right.
You will be the only one listed on title for that property. And so it will definitely be subject to probate. So beneficiary designations can work for some people who don't have real property, who may just have a couple bank accounts. But the other issue we deal with is, if what if your beneficiary passes away before you and you don't update the account in time? Now we're dealing with headache for the family down the road, unintended consequences, potentially probate. For the person who was listed as beneficiary who died.
Yep. No, good stuff. And the last thing I want to ask you about is the living trust. You mentioned early on that you just about recommend that all the time for people. You don't have to be a multi-millionaire, billionaire to need a living trust, right? I mean, I've heard you say it's your living, breathing document that controls your stuff.
Exactly. A living trust, you want to think of it as a vessel that's going to hold your assets for you. And if you pass away, you won't really own anything because your trust will own everything. So we get to avoid probate, and then we get to put everything in that document, living, breathing document. You get to update during your lifetime. Once you pass away, we can't change it. We follow the rules that you put in that trust according to how you want those assets divided. We can make plans to transfer wealth for generations, to keep it for special needs, to give it to any kind of causes you are passionate about. And so in this way, it's also private. So almost always I'm recommending the trust for my clients, not because I'm trying to sell them on anything, but because I truly believe in the amount of control you're able to have over the trust. And like you said, Paul, you don't have to be a millionaire. I've actually worked with clients who are, all already retired and don't have much in the way of any assets. They're actually on Medi-Cal, but they own a home. Right. And if that home is not in a trust, Medi-Cal gets to recover it through Medi-Cal estate recovery after that person's passing. So in that case, really, it's about succession, keeping the family home in the family, making sure that it doesn't get captured by fees and recovery processed by the government. So you definitely don't have to be a millionaire in that scenario. The other most common scenario I see is family with kids. Maybe they just closed title on a new home. Well, now we've got to make sure that this home isn't subject to probate, or if both spouses pass away, we can retain that home, keep it in trust, pay off the mortgage, keep it for the kids. So a lot of considerations where if it's just subject to probate, we're out of luck in that scenario.
Yep. Noelle, as always, great information. Really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And stay tuned, because we're going to have Noelle back. Noelle, thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye, everyone.
See ya.